Welcome back, restless dreamers, to True Crime Sleep Stories, where we unravel the shadows of history with whispers that lull you into uneasy slumber. Tonight, with Halloween's chill creeping closer, we're stepping into a story that's as haunting as a fog-shrouded graveyard. It's the real-life origin story of a quiet Wisconsin handyman whose horrors wove themselves into the fabric of our darkest nightmares, inspiring monsters that still stalk the silver screen. If you've been gripped by Netflix's monster, the Ed Gein story, you know this tale cuts deep, so pull the blankets tight, dim the lights, and let's begin, but maybe leave a candle burning. Before we wander into the frostbitten fields of Plainfield, let's pause for a moment. If these whispered tales have ever sent a shiver down your spine or eased you into a restless dream, we'd be so grateful if you could hop over to your podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating and a quick review. Tell us what keeps you coming back for more, or share which true crime story you'd love us to unravel next. Your support keeps the firelight glowing. And if you're feeling extra kind, join our Patreon at patreon.com/KellyBrink. For just a few dollars a month, you'll get ad-free episodes, exclusive deep dives into unsolved mysteries, and early access to Halloween specials like this one. It's what keeps our stories alive in the witching hour. Thank you from the bottom of our haunted hearts. Now, let's take a quick breath for an ad break from our sponsor. Stay with us, though. When we return, you'll sink into the full, uninterrupted tale told slow and steady, just for you. Welcome back to True Crime Sleep Stories. Find your coziest blanket. Let the world outside blur and settle into the stillness. Tonight's tale is one for the season of shadows, a slow, hypnotic descent into a world of isolation, obsession, and the fragile line between man and monster. Breathe deep and let the story of Edward Gein wrap around you like an October mist. Close your eyes if you dare, and we'll begin. Edward Theodore Gein was born on August 27, 1906, in La Crosse County, Wisconsin, a land of rolling plains and quiet rivers where the Mississippi whispered secrets to anyone who'd listen. He was the second son of George and Augusta Gein, a boy entering a home less a sanctuary than a crucible. Picture it. A weathered farmhouse, its walls stained with the echoes of shouted sermons and the sour tang of whiskey. George, a failed mill worker turned tanner, was a man eroded by his own disappointments, his hands more familiar with a bottle or a fist than a father's gentle touch. But it was Augusta who cast the longest shadow. A fierce Lutheran, she wielded scripture like a blade, her voice a constant hymn of sin and salvation. Women, she preached to her sons, were snares of the devil, their beauty a trap, their desires a highway to hell. Sex was forbidden, love a betrayal of God's will. Young Ed, with his soft features and shy smile, drank in her words like gospel, his world narrowing to the sound of her voice. His older brother Henry bristled under her rule, but Ed, he was hers, heart, soul, and trembling hands. In 1915, when Ed was 9, the family fled La Crosse for a 195-acre farm outside Plainfield, a speck of a town where cornfields stretched like silent sentinels under a wide, unyielding sky. The move was Augusta's doing, a bid to shield her boys from the world's temptations, to forge a fortress of faith. But the farm was no Eden. It was a grind of endless chores, of milking cows at dawn and mending fences under a merciless sun. George's drinking worsened, his rages a storm that battered the boys. Ed, small and awkward, found solace in Augusta's shadow, her approval the only warmth he knew. School was a fleeting escape. Ed was bright, but painfully shy, his classmates mocking his stutter and the way his eyes darted to the floor. By eighth grade, Augusta pulled him out, chaining him to the farm's rhythms. Henry, 4 years older, dreamed of breaking free, but Ed couldn't imagine a world beyond his mother's reach. George's death in 1940, felled by a heart attack at 66, left the family adrift. Augusta's grip tightened, her sermons now the only law. Ed, nearing 30, took on handyman jobs in Plainfield, fixing fences, painting barns, even babysitting for neighbors. He was quiet, polite, always a little strange, with a nervous laugh that surfaced at odd moments, like during a funeral or a story of loss. The townsfolk called him Eddie, a harmless oddity who'd blush at a kind word and vanish into the fields for days. Henry, bolder and brasher, began to push back against Augusta's dogma, urging Ed to see her for what she was, a tyrant cloaked in piety. The brothers clashed, their arguments sharp as winter wind, until May 16, 1944, when tragedy struck. A brush fire roared across the farm's edge, and Henry was found dead in the ash. Face down, lungs choked with smoke, his head bruised in ways that raised quiet questions. Ed claimed they'd been fighting the flames together, but the coroner's report noted no burns on Henry's body, only those mysterious marks. The official ruling was asphyxiation, but whispers of fratricide followed Ed like a shadow. Then came December 29th, 1945. Augusta, weakened by a stroke the previous year, suffered another. Ed found her in her bedroom, her stern face still, her hands folded like a saint's. She was 67, and her death broke something in Ed that no hammer could mend. He boarded up her room the next day, nails driven with a reverence bordering on worship, preserving her space as a shrine. The farm, already sagging under neglect, became his hermitage. Alone at 39, Ed drifted into a twilight world, sustained by odd jobs and a small inheritance. Plainfield saw less of him now, but when he appeared, he carried a new strangeness, a fascination with the macabre. He'd linger at the general store, thumbing through stacks of pulp magazines. Weird tales, true detective, startling stories, tales of cannibals, Nazis, and forbidden rituals filled his evenings, their lurid covers glowing under his lantern. Ilse Koch, the Witch of Buchenwald, captivated him. Her rumored lampshades of human skin, her cruelty, a dark mirror to his own stirrings. He read of anatomy, of taxidermy, of ancient rites, his mind a sponge for the grotesque. The graveyards called next. Evergreen Cemetery, 7 miles out, Plainfield Cemetery, closer still. Under harvest moons, when the town slept, Ed would slip out, shovel slung over his shoulder, the earth soft from autumn rains. He claimed later it was curiosity, studying death, not defiling it, but the truth was uglier. He targeted middle-aged women, their faces etched with the stern lines he'd loved in Augusta. One body, then three, then nine, perhaps 15, exhumed in secret and carried home in burlap sacks. He'd kneel in the dirt, flashlight trembling, peeling back the earth to claim his prizes. Back at the farm, the work began. Not butchery, not at first, but a kind of reverence. He'd dissect with care, preserving what he could, his hands steady as a surgeon's. Skulls became bowls, polished and practical, lining his shelves. Skin was tanned, stretched, sewn into grotesque relics, a lampshade that glowed with veined warmth, a chair upholstered in human hide, creaking under his weight. A corset, stitched from breasts, hugged his frame like a lover's embrace. A belt of nipples, a pair of lips on a drawstring for his curtains. And the masks. Faces peeled whole, dried like leather, worn in moonlit dances through the farmhouse. He'd slip into them, into her, Augusta's voice echoing in his head as he swayed. A boy again, safe in her shadow. This wasn't rage, not entirely. It was devotion, a son's desperate bid to resurrect the only love he'd known. The farmhouse became a cathedral of decay, its rooms choked with refuse, newspapers, tin cans, and the faint reek of formaldehyde. He cooked hearts on the stove, tasting the forbidden, and hung bones like wind chimes. But the dead could only satisfy so long. In December 1954, Mary Hogan, a 51-year-old tavern owner with a sharp tongue and a pistol on her hip, vanished from her bar on County Road N. The scene was chaos. Blood on the floor, a single bullet casing, her chair empty. Ed had been there that day, asking after her, his eyes lingering too long. The town mourned but moved on. Her case, a cold whisper in Plainfield's gossip. 3 years later, on November 16th, 1957, the truth clawed its way out. Bernice Warden, 58, ran the local hardware store. A kind woman, widowed, with a smile like fresh bread. Her son Frank left her to open the shop that morning, promising to return after a hunting trip. When he did, the store was a crypt. The cash register open, blood trailing across the floor, a receipt in Bernice's hand with Ed Gein's name scrawled in her neat script. Frank called Sheriff Art Schley, and the town held its breath. 7 miles out, at the Gein farm, Ed sat on his porch, whittling a stick, calm as a Sunday morning. The deputies didn't knock. They pushed inside, flashlights cutting through the dark, and found a house of horrors. Piles of trash reached chest high, the air thick with rot. In the shed, Bernice hung from the rafters, gutted like a deer, her head gone. They found it later, in a box by Ed's bed, wrapped like a Christmas present. The search continued. 11 skulls, some ground to dust for medicine. A drum of tanned skin, leggings sewn from legs, a window shade of human lips. Mary Hogan's head, too, rested in a sack, her face a grim trophy. Ed confessed in a flat voice, claiming Bernice reminded him of Augusta, her warmth a faint echo of his mother's. Mary, too, had been like Ma, he said, shot for reasons he couldn't name. The town reeled, its quiet streets now a stage for nightmares. News spread like wildfire, reporters descending on Plainfield, their cameras flashing at the farmhouse's sagging bones. The trial, delayed until 1968 by years of psychiatric evaluations, painted a fractured man. Schizophrenia, the doctors said. A mind splintered by isolation and Augusta's iron will. He was guilty of Bernice's murder, but insane, unfit for prison. They sent him to Central State Hospital, then Mendota, where he lived out his days. A docile figure in plaid, whittling chairs and tending gardens. The farm burned in 1958. Arson, most said. A town cleansing its wounds. Ed died on July 26, 1984, at 77, his lungs failing in a hospital bed, his name already legend. Hollywood wove him into its myths. Norman Bates' knife in Psycho, Leatherface's roar in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill's dance in The Silence of the Lambs. Ed Gein, the butcher of Plainfield, didn't just kill. He seeded nightmares that still grow in our dreams. And so, dear listeners, we leave the shadows of Plainfield, where one man's broken heart stitched a legacy of horror. Ed Gein's story is more than graves robbed or lives stolen. It's a mirror to the voids we all carry, the loves we cling to, the monsters we might become when left alone too long. This Halloween, as pumpkins grin and the night presses close, let it linger like a dream you can't shake. What shapes us and what can we unmake? Thank you for joining me in this whisper through the dark. If this tale chilled your bones or stirred your thoughts, share it with a friend who craves the eerie. Drop us a 5-star review, join our Patreon, and keep the stories alive. Until next time, when we chase another ghost under the moonlight, sleep well if you can. Good night. True Crime Sleep Stories is hosted and created by Kelly Brink, produced with the support of our dedicated team. Subscribe and review us on your favorite podcast platform to help us keep telling these haunting tales. Visit patreon.com/kellybrink for exclusive content and to join our community. Follow us on Instagram at True Crime Sleep Stories or on our YouTube channel, which is called Sleepy Time Creepy Time and has all sorts of creepy bedtime content waiting for you. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you in the shadows next time. Until then, stay safe out there and lock your doors. Good night.